Esports podcast, noun. A 2-hour-long video full of banter and nonsense where the guests are only introduced halfway through and the outro makes you think your internet's died.
Huh. Right, this is going to be another episode of Daring Minds. We dare to only have me and Gio on this episode. Do you mind? If so, then get out. I don't know. This is the thing.
Probably the best one you've come up with.
It wasn't bad, actually, even though it did involve telling people who were fans. Like, if you wanted a guest, just get out. Just don't even watch this episode. But that's fine. That's that. It, the thing about my style is I'm sort of, I won't even lie, by the way. I'm doing this consciously. If people don't want to know one of the other reasons why I'm sort of like, take it or leave it. If you don't like it, just get out. Because to be fair, a lot of people don't like my style. So if you know people are going to come in like, I don't quite like everything about this. It's like, well, I told you at the outset, just get out if you don't like it. It's like, I've sort of built that in, believe it or not, Gio, truthfully, to sort of stop myself getting hurt. I've now sort of just built a little wall around myself. Like, nah, I never really did it for anyone's validation. Thank you. I just did it for my own. But obviously, here's the other thing people don't realise about life. It's like, even if you say you're the villain, it still does hurt a little bit if everyone's like, you suck! It's like, oh, doesn't anyone think I'm good? I'm all right, Anna. Fucking hell.
My God, we just saw like the first soft spot of Thorin in your entire career.
The sad thing is, people don't know, but I actually do have one. I'm just human. But you know what my problem is? I'm not even joking. Is I actually was too good like crafting my persona, because the maddest detail of all, right? This is so nuts. I never like thought about this when I was doing CSGO events back in the day. But what I always thought was weird was the production people never came to me with any like pointers or feedback. Part of me did just think, well, I am brilliant, so what would they have to say? But what I realized years later, and this is so sad, the thing about a Gio, is of all the people, if this is the person you're coming through as like the go-between to me, then I must have been out of control. Because they used to go to Richard Lewis and think that Richard Lewis was like my handler, and that if they told him, like, he's got a bit over with the jokes. But the best part about that is, right, the reason this is actually funny, it's why I even tell this anecdote now, is because, first of all, it obviously didn't work because he's not my handler, he was just a mate of mine and a colleague, right? But even better, like, you have to understand, if you go to Richard like that, like, he's actually even going to get annoyed at the expectation that you're expecting he could like control me, and like, or that he should even have to, because obviously they'd be coming to him like,
yeah,
he's going a bit too far with the jokes. Then he'd be like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'm not him. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, when he's about, because they were really thinking in some naive way, like, as I'm about to say so, Richard's just going to jump in like, well, watch out there, Thorin. Like, he can't read my mind and know what the jokes are, can they? They're all made up on the spot. Like, even I don't know if they're rubbish or if they're good. Yeah, I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's funny.
So, by the way, obviously, VCT Masters Copenhagen is going on right now in the Valorant world. That's also why I thought we'd do a 2-man episode, because I did promise at the beginning of the show, actually, when we did the first one, like, we'll do it and all that. But that was, the downside of that was, believe it or not, we were, like, victims of our own success. Almost every guest that was bringing on was giving me, like, a different...
Too popular.
If you notice, like, even when they were the ones that, like, obviously weren't my first choice, maybe, or a bit more niche, they all had their own interesting angle on the world of Valorant. And actually, even one thing I found quite interesting is, because there's this meta where more teams in the world are relevant than just like EU and NA, like I'm used to in TAC FPS games. It even means you get these totally unique angles on all that stuff. Like when we had Legiron, who's coming from APAC region, and we had the people from the Korean region. So what I thought we'd do is we'll do a classic episode where Gio just gets a chance to give us some thoughts, shape some thoughts on Masters, which technically isn't over. There's obviously the last sort of stanza to play out. By the way, I actually think, as an aside, even though I'm not a huge fan of some of the other elements, like I'm not as big a fan in the format of the idea you skip from the regional to the playoffs of the LAN. Just because to me, parts.
Like if you come first, you get the bye.
Because two problems I have with that is, one, you only play online to get the bye. Like if you had regional LANs, maybe it wouldn't be as bad. But and then two, the other part is, it does imply that like all the regions are like better their first seed, which is, and the reason I bring that up is that's like a classic mistake they made in League of Legends where they just like artificially said like, these are all top seeds. And so you'd have scenarios where famously, it's why if people don't know in League of Legends, number one seed from America never actually does anything in the tournament, because believe it or not, even though you should be good in seeding, like I'm number one seed. It's like, yeah, but when you're number one seed, right, the way it works in League of Legends is you can get like two number two seeds, which means you can have the number two seed from Korea and China. Well, the joke is in League of Legends, they're better than you, even if you're the number one. You know what I mean?
Anyway.
So like, so you can actually get a group of death as a number one seed. So you can see what I mean?
It would make sense if like maybe they did the sort of the GSL groups and then whoever comes top of that group gets the bye in the playoffs. Like I've seen that a few times in various tournaments and that would make sense. But I kind of agree with you, because I think the sad thing about it is that with the almost unpredictability that we've discussed before that you get in Valorant, with a lot of teams finding different levels of success as the meta changes, and especially as the tournaments are quite spread out,
Yeah.
You get teams who have like a really good run in that stage, and then they get the bye into the playoffs, but they're not developed enough to really like make the most of that. And it's almost like, I don't want to say it's setting up for failure, but I think that you could potentially, it could almost potentially be more of a supporting thing to allow them to play as much as they possibly can in the tournament.
Think of this example. Imagine your team, the two obvious ones. Either maybe your team has never played online ever. Like, you're one of those teams that formed online, so you just never had the experience. Or the obvious one would be, I think it was last Masters, right? Wasn't the last one where they did like the controller meta switch? Like, you can also just have a complete patch switch. Like, maybe you got amazing in the old patch, and then the new patch comes out, and then you never played it. Because that's where, like, the problem here is, like, here's the thing that makes this one tricky, Gio, is the actual groups in these VTTs are being really competitive. So you can't make it like, like, here's the difference in Worlds or something in League. The reason I'd say to do group stages is just give someone a warm-up, you know. These aren't really warm-ups. Like, you can get fucking knocked out of these groups, like, as you've seen. Like, these are way more dangerous than people thought. But at the same time, as we're saying, like, the best examples are people like the Guard, Guild. Like, these teams that are a bit of the newer squads, I just do get the vibe from competition that, like, even if they did get eliminated, I almost feel like it would be better for them to start at the beginning of the tournament, you know?
Because
if they get thrown in the deep end, like, if you notice, the players almost seem a bit wounded, almost like... Like, on the one hand, you want the advantage to go to the playoffs, but you feel like, what the hell, like, I'm out straight away. Well, like, it's a bit hard, right?
The team for this tournament that I would really, like, attribute that story to is Exet, who sort of we discussed last time about them maybe being this Masters guard, because they were the number one seed from NA. Yeah. And Exet played a grand total of 4 maps in this tournament before being eliminated, but their first game was Optic. So it's like they got to play one team who aren't from their home region.
Oh, yes, exactly, yeah.
Right? And so it's just sort of like, I think it's just a shame, because at least if you have managed to come first domestically, you've got this bye, you're going straight into playoffs at the LAN, and some of your players maybe have some LAN experience and some of them don't, which is the case with Exet. You don't want 50% of your entire experience to be just playing a team that you've played for the last year in your domestic league online. I think it's just a shame that they don't get to walk away from this tournament at least having gained the experience of playing against international teams. Yes. They played against Leviathan, and that's it. Like, I would have loved to have seen them at least get the opportunity to play teams like DRX or even like Guild, you know, play against an EU team, like something like that. I just think that would be such a valuable learning tool to at least leave the tournament with. But because, I mean, obviously, the next tournament now is Champions. There aren't any other Masters tournaments this year. But let's say there were, not only is there no guarantee that they're going to make it to Masters, because this was their first Masters. Their there haven't been enough teams who have been like consistently qualifying for these tournaments anyway. But also, you want to believe that if they show up to the next LAN event, that they're going to at least be more prepared based on their experience at this one. And I think for Exet especially, that's just not something that I could necessarily say they're going to leave with, which I think is just a shame.
Yeah, that's the one thing I would say if I had to like give Riot advice about the format. Not necessarily what specific format I would choose. They can go whatever direction they want. But I would have just said, if you just think about the context that Valorant, the game, hasn't had many lands still. Like, we're probably only like, what, the 8 lands in or something ridiculous if you count like the real ones, the VCTs and stuff. Like, there's not many of them still. Like, there's
not even that.
Yeah, it would have been
Masters 2, Masters 3 last year, then Champions, and then you have Masters 1, Masters 2 this year. So 5.
So what I would say to them is I would have just picked a LAN format where essentially you just tried to get like even the teams that eliminated play a few more games just to give people the experience and all that jazz, you know, just to level the scene up that way. Because essentially, like, even if you lose, an official match like that can be the best scrim in a sense. Like, if you play against a real region, you know they're playing the match properly and they're trying to win and all that jazz, right? The one thing I was going to say, though, that's a positive about this format that I do like, though, is it's not like it just runs constantly through the bracket. They do have these breaks, like you say, so between the groups and the bracket, and and then now there's this break, obviously, where it's like the last three sort of get separated out and figured out for a few days. Well, the reason why I like that angle is, as we were talking about on some of our past episodes, because the difference between this game and CSGO and the other attack FPS is as two components that you can, that like essentially can be OP. You can have the agents, could obviously be hard to deal with, but you can have the map as well. So this just gives you more time to prep for specific opponents. So what it should mean hasn't really mattered so far, I noticed on the last one, but in theory, one of these days, one of those top three teams is going to come up with some like wonder strategy during these days and fucking win the tournament. That'll happen eventually if you give like sort of a spot like this. Like, I like that for the championship sort of part of the tournament, you know, give it like a strong run to close potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy that as well. Like, I think it's always a shame when in any esport and you get these, I've seen this complaint in Rainbow Six a lot recently, but like where there is a real big disparity between how much prep time teams from region A get and teams from region B get in the lead up for a LAN, for example. So I think when you can have like breaks within the tournament, because not even is it just good for prep time, but also like burnout prevention, right? It's like this is the highest level of competition that's currently happening in Valorant until we get to Champions. And so, you know, these teams have been going really hard, like to be able to at least give them those natural breaks. And from a talent perspective, it's also nice as well to have that too.
Oh, it's awesome at the LAN, yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Just catch up on some sleep and be able to do some work. I think that that's a really good thing. And then obviously, like, part of the reason why that's here in this tournament right now is because they're going to be bringing the audience in this weekend, right? So they're going to actually get to see the remaining portion of the bracket.
I assume was the reason to have it in Copenhagen, so you could be sure you could have this crowd, since they were having events even last year in CSGO.
I would imagine
here.
Yeah, I mean, Denmark has been really chill about...
It's been super open
Denmark,
for like a year or so, yeah.
I worked in Denmark in October, and like the UK was already fairly lax regarding like mask wearing and stuff like that. But in Denmark, you got looked at weirdly if you wore a mask. Like they were just, their level of COVID was so astronomically low that like it just was like it didn't exist. So I think Denmark have always been quite open with that. Or at least, you know, for a long time. So I assume that's part of the reason that they decided to do it in Copenhagen. I'm definitely curious to see, we talk about like teams who, you know, we're like, oh, you know, they have some players who have no LAN experience. How are they going to fare on LAN? Now my question is like, okay, we have teams who do have LAN experience, but how are they going to fare with a crowd? Because that's the new thing, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, that's even the angle where... some of those people who in theory did have an edge over the native Valorant players from CSGO, if they're the ones that didn't make it to the top in CSGO, though, they won't have any of the LAN experience in front of a crowd. Like, that's the difference. People like the Tensors of the world, they won't do it. Like, they'll have played like a Blast tournament or something in CSGO, you know, like a smaller event with like a crowd, but they'll have never played at like, you know, the IM Colognes of the Canavitzes of the world. It's not like they've been in those crowds. So to be fair, that's actually something of an equalizer. Like, in fact, I would even say people who are like Overwatch pros might have an edge on that guy if they've played at the finals or something.
That's
you never
true.
Know because that's that was
that's
decent LAN experience. So, and they obviously had, if people don't know, in Korea, just like they do in Valorant, they had an Overwatch scene where they had big crowds at the finals and stuff. Right, let's get into some of the teams then. So you said we were talking earlier, so I think actually just in line of like where they are in the tournament, let's talk about Guild. Because Guild was the team where, if you remember, when we had Barbar on the show at the last Masters, basically, they were the team that was like just outside qualifying. And a lot of people thought in Europe, like, they're like a quality squad. Like, who knows how good they're going to be. The fact that supposedly in practice they were good. Then they come, they qualify this time. They win the group. Brilliant. They win the group with Optic and everything looking great. But then they just wrecked in the playoffs. Lost to Paper X, which sure is a potential favourite. But then losing to FPX. I mean, you would say, obviously, again, regional person, like, that is supposed to be the best European team with Fnatic. Like, what's your take on Guild? Is this, what's the grade you'd give this? Like, was this a good run from them? Should they have gone further? Did you expect more?
I'm going to say yes, a good run, because they got way further than I thought they would. I didn't think they were actually going to qualify for the playoffs at all. My one sort of disclaimer I'm going to put here is I did see their group stage games, but because I was then working, I didn't see their playoff games.
Fair enough.
I remember watching the Guild versus Optic game. Now, you can partially put some of that on... the fact that Optic looked really like out of whack, like EA was not performing in those early games. And so there is, you know, partial blame to them. And also that was still a relatively close series. Like I have the score up here. It was 13-11 on the first map to Guild and then it was 16-14. So that's an overtime score. But I was still really impressed that they beat Optic 2-0 nonetheless. And I think that I was really happy to see Leo especially get a lot of international accolade because he has been discussed as arguably their best player and actually in some cases arguably a player who is sort of too good for the rest of the team,
right. And
potentially one of the best initiators and Sova players in the entire world. And so to kind of see him be celebrated for that, I thought was really cool. And it was definitely clear to me, at least, that despite the team's, this being the team's first foray into international competition, he was showing up in that sense. And I think that a lot of praise was also given to, I think this was something that we spoke about as sort of predicting, but like a lot of praise was also given to Coldamenta as his sort of IGL prowess being a real grounding force within the team, which is something that potentially if he weren't there or an IGL of that caliber were not there, maybe they would have been in a lot more of a frenzy than we did see them. But that said, it, you know, it doesn't shock me that they didn't do so well in the playoffs. The fact that they went up against Paper X as their first team in the playoffs. I said in our last episode that I thought Paper X were a perfectly viable potential winner of this tournament. And I think that that's still looking to be the case. So for Paper X to perform the way that they did and kind of flatten Guild doesn't surprise me. Forsaken especially has just been absolutely nuts for the team. And we already knew that you know, they had these very hyper aggressive ways of playing. That has not really had any successful shutdown by any of their opponents thus far, but also Mind Freak on the team has been playing way above expectations, which has certainly helped them out. And then when Guild went down into the lower bracket, they were playing against FPX. And I just want to check. Okay, so this was the first game that Sugetsu came back in. So Sugetsu was their player who, he's an absolutely nutty player, but his visa was really delayed. Yes. They didn't know if he was going to get it, so they were playing with a sub in the group stage. And then for playoffs, he gets his visa in time. So he comes back in the playoffs, and holy fuck, he's been playing like a machine. Like, we talk about players who perform really well online and then they come into the LAN and we don't know what to think of them. Sugetsu didn't even get the group stage to kind of warm up to things. The pressure is on him to basically like save your team and give them a run. And it's like he's just stepped into the playoffs and been a fucking madman. So I think that Guild going up against full force FPX rather than sub FPX, it also doesn't surprise me too much that that went a bit differently. I mean, Guild obviously, you know, FPX is a known quantity for them because they come from the same region. And there have been some weak points for FPX with Angel has definitely received a lot of criticism just because his personal performance has not necessarily been the best in this event so far. So I guess that's why they went to three maps, you know, rather than it being any kind of stomp like against Paper X. It was a little bit more so, especially on that first map. But yeah, like, to cut a long story short, I would say that I think Guild outdid my personal expectations. And once they got through into playoffs, they probably matched around what I would have thought they would do.
Also looks like in playoffs they got pretty hard draws, so there's nothing you can really do there.
Whoever was going to be seeded against Paper X was going to have a difficult time.
You're supposed
time.
To lose that, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of unfortunate, and But I do think the Guild are sort of what we just spoke about Exet. Guild have sort of been fortunate to have the opposite experience there where they did get to go in through the group stage. So they've played Optic, who are an NA team. They played Crew, who are a Latin American team. They played Paper X, who are an APAC team. And then they've played another European team. So actually, I think the Guild will still probably walk away from this event having, you know, reaped a lot of value from it.
On the other end of the equation, a team we obviously have to address narratively has got to be Loud, because they were in the finals of the previous VCT Masters, but then this time they're bounced in last place. Now, admittedly, some of the map scores look close. It's not like they're getting destroyed completely, but, and true, Optics in their group, the team that did win, so it's not like everything's, you know, fucking just sunshine and rainbows, but even so, you're supposed to get out the group if you're Loud. I mean, they were potential dark horse to win the tournament because of last result, right?
Yeah, I mean, Loud, yeah, it surprised me that they didn't do as well, because I thought that Optic and Loud were going to be the two teams to qualify through this group.
Understandably, they were finalists last time, yeah.
Exactly, and that was the whole thing. Like, I watched their elimination match, and I have to say, so as I say, I missed a lot of the early playoff games because I've been working, but I watched the group stage games, and I remember being so happy that I stayed up to watch the whole thing of the elimination match. And I would say to anybody who hasn't seen it, go back and watch it, because the like closeness of that game, it was a 13-8 the first map, then the next map was an 8-13, so same scoreline backwards, and then the last map went into overtime. So for it to go that, like, it, that says a lot, I think, about how decently matched Optic and Loud were, but we just expected it to be further along in the tournament than it was at this point. And I think that Loud probably had a little bit of, like, I don't know, a stroke of bad luck, because obviously their first game, which was against Crew, didn't go their way, and that was a game that I would have assumed would have gone their way. And they had some, like, a good play. I think Aspas was doing very well, but I actually, like, just watched, like, the most recent episode of Plat Chat, and I think they put it best, where they said Loud were playing well, but they didn't look like they had anything new. And I think that is one of those things where we've spoken about, like, sort of the speed at which, like, the ideas in Valorant change and evolve, and the fact you have to always be ahead of that curve. That is something that isn't really going to benefit you if you sort of come into a tournament and you aren't showing anything particularly innovative. And so I think that maybe, like, it's so hard, you know, easy to say this, but, like, potentially on a different day, it could have gone a different way and maybe they would have qualified. And I think that, you know, it's one of those teams that you look at and you say, all right, let's say that hypothetically they had made it into playoffs. They probably wouldn't have been first rounded if they'd have made it into playoffs. They probably, I don't know if they would have had a really deep run. That's a very hard thing to say, but they, you know, they maybe would have made it into, like, the second round of playoffs at least. Right. So it was a really unfortunate thing for them. And that elimination match just blew my mind. It was a really good game.
What's the general take on Crew, by the way? Because obviously this squad has now given us every possible permutation except, like, win the fucking tournament. Like, they've had, like, group stage exits. They've been the upset team. They've been the team that made the playoffs. Obviously, the champions, they had an amazing run. Like, what do you make of where they're at? Because at the moment, like, again, at the moment, you obviously can't discount anyone when you get to the land stage of the tournament. But they haven't had the playoff run in a while now.
Yeah, I mean, Crew are an interesting one because, as we said last time, they're the only team to have qualified for every single event in Valorant. So when you look at them in relation to their region, they're obviously huge. And we have seen instances where they...
Are they just like the big fish in the pond of that, like, LATAM space?
Well, yeah, I think to an extent, yes. But I think that they can also be a decent sized fish in this pond too, right? Because we've seen that before. I just don't know if, like, I don't know if I believe there's enough depth to them, if that makes sense. And actually, like, this sort of, and maybe this is a controversial take, but, like, this sort of aligns with kind of what some people are saying about DRX right now, which is, like, okay, you've had this same roster for some time now, and you haven't, there's always been that wall. At what point do you consider you may need to change it?
Yeah,
even
course.
Though, like,
yeah,
yeah. You're evidently a very good team and you're constantly qualifying for these events and you are having good performances there, but you're not having good enough performances there. And at some point that has to be considered just simply not sufficient. And so that's my wondering with Crew. I mean, I think that, you know, Kesnit has always been a great player for them. And actually, back last year, I always really enjoyed watching Delzic as well, even though he's maybe a little bit less like flashy. But again, like this was back in a meta where we saw a ton of like Reyna play and stuff like that. So it's a different meta, a different time. I didn't anticipate Crew getting out of their group. Their win against Loud really surprised me. And they also had like a decent push against Guild as well. There were two overtime games, and then the one of the maps that Crew lost was quite a loss. It was a 13-6. And so it's sort of like, all right, maybe they're on that cusp, but it's like, how long do you push at the cusp before you realize that your forward motion is not keeping up with everyone else's? I don't know. Like, I find these things so hard to judge, because there's like the commitment argument and the we have this synergy and we kind of know what how we all work and that we have great players, and especially if you're in a smaller region and your option, your talent pool is maybe a little bit smaller. It's just sort of like, is that the right decision to then break that up when you have been consistent in your qualification for so long? But yeah, it's kind of like you say, they've sort of had every different experience of LAN performance, where like they've gone all the way, but they've also gone out in groups.
Yeah, the thing for me is like, I'll be very interested to see in Valorant, because it looks like the circuit's going to affect us as well. Actually, what is like the lifespan of a team if essentially the move doesn't work, or as you say, you just don't progress beyond a certain level? Because I have to say, yeah, in CSGO, the problem we had in our game was, especially a few years ago, we had probably one of the most healthy LAN scenes in the world. So like every 2 weeks, there really would be a tournament. So I always used to say, in the world where you'd have every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, you have a LAN, I used to say, actually only takes like, say, 2 or 3 months before you know if the team is going to be good or not. Like if it goes 2 or 3 months and players, let's say like 6 or 7 lands, if you're not actually good at the end of that, you're never going to get good. Like that team has just not worked. Like, because at the end of the day, 3 months is a lot of scrims. You've played official games, you've seen all of the permutations. Like at that point, if something has to click, like that's the problem I think with esports is this. It is true that you wanted all these concepts are great, like the idea of like you build a team and you like, you know, like you improve things, but you can't polish a turd, as the old saying goes in England. Like there has to be some initial synergy, like the initial composition of players has to be good on some level, you know. You have to on some level have like chemistry that hopefully some of it's natural, yeah, you know, like a couple of players play well together. I think you can improve, but I think the problem for me is, and that's what you're sort of getting to, is like, is it a fundamental impasse? If it is, then it doesn't matter if you're like just that close. You might just be that close every time. But the problem obviously is, yeah, if it ends up being like maybe in their region, for example, maybe their team player's part of why their team's even good. And if you put in a better player on paper, maybe it makes that worse. That can happen too. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the hard thing. Like, is this the best permutation of players that we have in this region? And I mean, I'm always kind of like open to the fact that no, I think if you look hard enough, if you're not coming first in these tournaments, if you look hard enough, then yeah, it is possible to find a better group of people, or even if it's just switching out one comp.
I mean, they're even doing something like that. To be fair, they even have that weird angle where, because they can recruit anyone who speaks Spanish in theory, like they must have loads of people they could potentially source from.
Yes, that's true. And also, like, going back to another one of the points that you just made about when the regions kind of come together next year, it could be that simply being in an environment where they are then regularly playing not just the best Latin American teams, but also the best North American teams as well, because, you know, those two regions are going to be coming together to be one mega region. Yeah, that could end up being like a really big part of it. If simply your day-to-day scrim partners and opponents and whatever are of an average higher level, then that could just end up being what you need. Like, yeah, you know, environment.
That sounds like for those little regions, it'll be very interesting if they get thrown in with the NA group. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because it's going to be like the Americas region.
Right.
So it's not going to be NA and LATAM as two separate regions. It's going to be one like big region. So But then the question that you have there is, do they remain to be a, I was going to say fully Chilean team, but they have one Argentinian player and an Argentinian coach. But do they remain to be a fully South American team if they are now playing on North American soil and they also have the option to maybe pick? Because I'm going to assume, I don't know if this has been said anywhere, I'm going to assume, let's say they implement a 3 out of 5 rule for the regions, do basically anywhere. Does that then mean that 3 out of the 5 have to be from any of the Americas?
I would assume
be, because surely if you say crew, you have to have 3 out of 5 Latin American players, but Optic, you have to have 3 out of 5 North American players. That is an unfair, balance, especially if you're playing in the same league. So it must be, right? So I don't know. Like, do they do that and they say, okay, well, we're going to fill 3 slots with North American players then, and we'll just keep 2 of our Latin American players. I don't know. I suspect that there will be some politics getting involved in that part of it. But in an ideal world, assuming that they do keep their full roster now, that could end up being like what they need. Now, that might mean that it's less likely that they qualify for international events for some time. If they're sort of put into this new pool where the competition's harder and therefore it's harder for them to get to the top of it, that may be what it is. But it could be that it sort of throws, you know, those videos where people throw babies into pools and they eventually swim?
Born or whatever, yeah, sure.
Yeah. It could be like that. So, like, give them a year and then they're actually...
It's the thing, though. You've gotten the premise mixed up, though. It's when they're born in a pool, then they just can swim.
No, that's... No, you don't know what videos I'm talking about. There are literally
videos... There's actually a version where you throw it into
that. People stand on the side of a pool and they throw babies in. It's to teach them how to swim.
I mean, in theory, that might work as well. I know what you mean, actually. I think I do know what you mean, actually. I thought for a second you'd just taken the premise and, like, you didn't realize they were being born in the pool. I know what you mean. You mean like a TikTok phenomenon or something, right, where it's like something they do to just show that it can sort of, like, swim immediately or some shit, right?
I like how you say that as if it's like, this is an experiment we're doing to prove the baby.
Isn't it like a trend that people are copying it? They're like, oh, look, I did it with mine and it works as
they
well.
They do them for like water safety courses, I think. So that little kids and babies are used to, they just learn how to
live. Yeah, in theory they can do it naturally. Like, yeah, exactly.
It's not like a social experiment for TikTok.
No, but I just meant that, like, people, I meant it took off as a trend, like, people copying other people.
Yes.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's what they were doing, like, the same way if the dog does something cool, they try and get their dog to do it or whatever, right? By the way, what you were saying at the end there, though, you're right, the downside, obviously, if you combine all these regions is if these end up being on the bottom of the hierarchy. If you don't qualify, and there's only 3-4 spots or whatever, you don't get it, that sucks. But here's the upside, though. You can actually have what basically happens in CSGO happen now, which is, because everyone's going to know all the NA teams, even down to like the 7th or 8th team, like, let's be real, in NA, as we talked on last episode, there's 1 million orgs trying to get in. Like, there's big orgs that don't even get into the VCT part of the challenges, etc.
I think they've just gone through the next round of franchise.
They've started doing something like that, yeah. So basically, when they have this set up, the good news is this: if you're a not well-known team from Brazil, Latin America, the point is you will actually have a platform to show that you're good, though. Because if you come and you qualify for this, or you play like one of these teams and you beat them, people are going to know by virtue of the opponent who you are, and you sort of get a bit of shine. That's how you can get known. Because the problem we're going to always have is we're not hooked into like the Brazilian scene. We don't know who the up-and-coming player is or what the next, like, you know, you only tend to find that out once to get to the land, you know. It's like, it's a little
at that point. Actually make me wonder now you say that, like, because I don't like the tier 2 scene, presumably those will be separate, like North America and
that's a bit weird,
all
isn't
of
it?
The Latin American ones, because I highly doubt there are going to be, unless they have an actual academy system, I highly doubt there are going to be orgs that are willing to pay to move tier 2 players into North America if they don't need to. So I do wonder about that, because then, like, if your development system is imbalanced, that also maybe, like, implies there's going to be a more of a bias towards picking up North American talent. Like, I don't know, because I still think that the information that they've actually given about it is fairly bare bones for now. So I'm sure at some point, like, we'll find out about this stuff. Because then, I was going to say, oh, maybe they'll have it combined but do it online. But actually, I don't think that would be logistically very ping-wise. I don't think that'd be super possible. So I don't know. But my hope is that these teams with Latin American and Brazilian players aren't going to find themselves sort of picked apart when the regions combine. And I hope that what it will be is just a really big beneficial position for those teams to just have better competition to improve. Because these teams at the top of the tree in those regions, like Loud, like Crew, we know about them. They have like global fans now. No one is going to be talking about these teams as if they're shit. They're not going to be looking at them and being like, you know, that's like a small region. Don't really think that's. I think they've proven that they can be a region or regions to be taken seriously. But I would love to see that sort of extend below just the very top layer. And then, yeah, I guess that just depends on how it is that a lot of the new format is going to be approached.
Let's switch it up. Obviously, Optic are the reigning champions, and right now they're guaranteed a top three finish. We don't know, maybe they're going to win this event as well. Right, when they locked in that top three, I said this on Twitter, but I think it's a good convo to have. People don't realise, but obviously we don't know yet if they come third, if they win the event outright. But if you just look now at their international placings and back when they were Envy with the same core with just some slight tweaks, like genuinely this team now has to be like contender for the best Valorant team ever. Because you know the names people are going to put out there. It's like, for example, like obviously like the Gambit players, they didn't win that many events. Like actually their period was almost like status in the scene. If you go, everyone's going to go, what about Sentinels? That was ages ago and after that was like all those cops at the beginning of the game. Like these Optic guys and the Envy Gap, they've done it during like the actual real land period of the VCT. This is impressive.
I think they are the only team who you can really look at and be like, okay, they've had a somewhat consistent multi-meta success. I did make me laugh. I said that I watched the newest episode of Plat Chat. One of the things that Josh Sideshow said on it was he was like, I don't want to hear anyone fucking talking about teams having eras in Valorant yet, because the amount of time you need to even see if a team has an era, Valorant hasn't existed as an esport that long yet. And which I think is fair, but I think that within the context of Valorant's format and also its length of life, Optic is arguably the only team who you could make an argument for that at this point. And I think, yes, it's probably more accurate to say that they simply are the most successful Valorant team. Because I don't even really give a shit that they're not the world champions. Yeah. In fact, they did us at champions, but like no one else has had a track record that Optic have had. And crucially, and I personally think this is really important, maybe this is down to personal preference, but like I think it's also really important that Optic have been the same roster for all of this that we're discussing.
Yes.
Whereas like teams like Fnatic, for example, you know, Fnatic came second at Masters 2 last year, so this is May 2021, and then they missed Masters 3, and then they went to Champion. And so Fnatic have done well, but they've changed things along the line, and it's still been quite up and down. And so I think the fact that Optic have been able to maintain this same roster, they made one coaching change in that time, and consistently put up these kinds of results is very impressive, because no other team are really close to matching that sort of, for lack of a better term, legacy right now.
Yeah, yeah. Right, obviously, you made a video on your YouTube channel, which tied into this. You made it. It was called basically, like, you know, like, why did Sentinels, almost like, what was it? Like, why did they drop off, but Optic?
But Optic continued somewhere? Yeah.
Obviously, we don't want to just, like, cannibalize all that. But for this period right now, you said, like, keeping the roster together. Do you have any, what would be the key reasons you'd hit on as to why you think Optic's been able to do it? Like, why have they been the team that have endured and consistently been able to go to these international tournaments and been legitimate, you know?
The main argument that I made in that video was that Optic have been able to stay ahead of the curve in changes that have happened in the game. So like my big thing that I kind of look at is I think that one of the biggest things that's going to give you success in Valorant at the moment and has been for a while is innovation. And I think that Optic have always been ready to innovate. And then not only that, their players have been willing to kind of role switch, or at least soft role switch, to accommodate that. Now, I think that role switching or soft role switching is a fairly popular ideal in Valorant now, but I think that the time at which Optic maybe started looking at doing that towards the end of last year, very beginning of this year, there were still a lot of teams who were quite stringent on the roles that they were taking. Right. And Optic was sort of one of the first teams, I think, or first major teams, to really try and break out of that somewhat. And so I think that Optic's, and this was actually a fear I had about Optic coming into this event, is that, so going into the previous Masters event, Optic had just started bringing in this whole like neon thing that they really popularized. And that was in like the last couple of weeks of the regular season. But they didn't really bring anything new in like that or comparable in the last couple of weeks of the regular season this time. And my fear was that by this point, a lot of other teams had started implementing the ideas that Optic had come up with in the last stage. And my fear was that if Optic don't keep trying to like stay one step ahead in those things, then these other teams were going to implement them and improve upon them and then come up with their own things and eventually leapfrog. I think that Optic do have like certain crutches. I think the really big crutch for Optic is the fact that they have a very big reliance on Ye. And that was kind of prevalent in the early games that they had of this event when Ye wasn't performing super well, and you could see that Optic therefore weren't performing super well, and they have overcome that. And I think this is not something that I said in that video that I can remember, but it's something that you see a lot of people talk about, and that is that one really big strength that Optic have is that they usually maintain a lot of composure during events, and if they start off badly, they're good at overcoming whatever it was that was their problem at the beginning of it. And I do think that, that's something that Optic are particularly good at. But yeah, they've definitely proven that concern that I had wrong. And I just think they're quite good at like generally adapting. I'm not talking necessarily like round by round, like making a really big strategic switch, but I think just recognizing like the small things they have to do, whether that's like internally between the five of them and how they discuss, like sometimes you don't even necessarily see what it is they're adapting on. You just see that their ability to cope with rounds and cope with opponents gradually improves over the course of an event. So I think that they're a very diligent team. So yeah, whether that comes to just maintaining or being ahead of the curve in like what's actually the quote unquote correct way to play the game, or if it's just being very vigilant about how their opponents are playing and therefore what they need to do going into the next series. And like in the context of the video I made where it was like, you know, why are they good at this and Sentinels aren't, is like Sentinels kind of all of those things Sentinels weren't good at. And not that we need to go super deep into Sentinels right now because they're not at this event, but like that I think is one of the big problems with them, is like when problems came up in the team, they either dealt with them too late or they sort of, from an outsider's perspective, it looked like they stuck their heads in the sand a little bit. They sort of ran against a wall with the same ideas that they had at the beginning of the game, which simply weren't relevant anymore. And I think they sort of represent diametrically opposite ways of trying to move forward in the competitive system of this game.
Indeed. As we've addressed on many other episodes, right? A team I want to talk about now is going to be DRX, the Korean team, right? Because here's what sucks. especially when I see all this, like all these other regions having good results, and then people like Paper X are potential contenders. Because I come from all these esports where Koreans are amazing, I just want Koreans to potentially be the best in attack FPS. Because when it happened in Overwatch, I thought it was amazing. I thought it revolutionized mm-hmm. the game. And I've always wanted to see in CS what would happen, essentially. This is the closest I'm going to get, probably. But the problem with the DRX team, as far as I can tell, Gio, is this. They are like the ultimate tease. They always look like, oh, they're coming fucking strong this time. But then they just fizzle out, don't they? Like, they never quite make as far as you think you're going to.
Here's the thing with DRX is, like, they're great until they start facing European and North American teams. And that usually comes, like, when they get to this bit where they're in the middle of the playoffs bracket and it's like, oh, shit, now I actually have to face the really hard teams. And I don't know, they just, like, struggle when they get there. And the thing is, actually, so DRX went out after losing to FPX in the lower quarterfinals. And they got to the lower bracket in their previous series, which they played against Optic, which was the upper bracket semis. And in both of these series, they looked arguably like the better team. Like, the beginning of the game, they looked really, really strong. I think DRX took Optic's map, which was the first map. It was 13-4. They, like, blasted them. And then it just looked really not good on the following map. And then it was quite a close last map. In the case of the game against FPX, the first map, I'm pretty sure at the half, it was 6-6. So it was like, and this was FPX's map choice, was Ascent. And so every time, like, FPX were putting a round on the board, DRX were matching it. And they couldn't really get away. And then you get towards the end of these maps and the end of the series, and suddenly that slips. Like, the other team manages to find, like, the crack in the armor, and they can then, like, pull it all apart. And DRX really, really struggle with that. And I think that DRX, one particular player has received quite a bit of criticism throughout the course of this event, and that's RB. Now, RB is an interesting one because kind of back last year, you'd pretty much see RB mostly playing agents like Killjoy, like, really taking on that Sentinel role. But because Buzz has been, who was always their traditional Jett player, Buzz has been playing a lot of Chamber, RB has then moved on to Jett. And actually, we've seen RB kind of taking a number of different roles because he played KO against FPX, he played Neon against FPX. And I'll be honest, like, there are moments where he plays really well. But the problem with RB really is that he has died in a lot of opening engagements, at least in this event. His statistics have been, like, I don't know, a little bit rough. Like, he has the highest opening death per round of any player in this tournament. He has the fifth lowest cast percentage of any player in this tournament at 65%. And so it's just sort of like, he's a good player when he's really on. Like, there are rounds where you're like, holy shit, this man's a machine. But it's just the times where he's letting the team down, he's kind of really letting the team down. And that's something that he's received some substantial criticism for over the course of this event. And yeah, I just think that when they come up against these teams, like a team like Optic, you know, this Titan from North America, it just gets really, really difficult. And I mean, so in Bind, for example, which was the third map, that was the one that was actually quite close, it's like they want to be making these, like, very, I don't think ballsy is necessarily the right word, but very decisive opening engagements. And so this is where RB is getting called out, right? It's like, you've got Ye standing there as Chamber on somewhere like, I don't know, Garden B long, and it just, he can get the opening kill because he's just standing there with an AWP, or he's got his Tour de Force, or even if he's just got his Sheriff thing. And then suddenly you're in a 4v5 very early on. And it sucks because, like, there is such a lot of real prowess in this team. But it's another team where you look at them and you're like, okay, should you make a change? Because you, once again, have been one of these teams that have had some amazing stories and some amazing
how
runs.
How good you
and
actually
some amazing
think that
performance.
In terms of like individual ability, like mechanics and like raw skill, like how highly do you rate the DRX team? Do you think they have skilled players?
Yeah, no, I think they're great.
Like,
I mean,
don't people
I think
usually
that...
rave about the Stax guy? Isn't he usually like the star player or something?
Yeah, I mean, I love Stax. So Stax was always really known for playing Breach, and his Breach is absolutely fantastic. And I think Buzz has always been a fantastic Jett. I think that there are other players in similar roles that I would rate higher. I mean, I think that Stax, in terms of his literal like ability to play Breach, for example, is pretty up there for Breach players. But if we're talking about like the mechanical ability, they are all very mechanically adept players. And I do think Buzz is a fantastically mechanically gifted player. But then I don't know if, whereas maybe this time last year, we would have looked at him and been like, oh yeah, no, he is like really, really up there. I don't know if I think that he stands out enough amongst people who are similarly rated or similarly performing for me to be like, oh yeah, this is, I've always been a bit of a DRX skeptic. I will put that. And I think that came out in the last episode that we did.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it is because I think they're a great team, but I just don't get that like wow factor from them. I think because overall their international performance has always been good, but like,
you know,
it's like, okay, they're going to make it into playoffs. They're going to like, they're not going to have a deep run. They're not going to have a shallow run. They're just going to have a run, you know? And so I'm always more interested kind of in like what their opponents are doing. You know, I'm like, I don't look at someone like Buzz and I'm like, oh wow, I'm so hyped to see Buzz play today. But I can see why some people would be. But even like, I might look at a team like, I don't know. I mean, Exet, who didn't even go as far, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I'm stoked to see Cryo, because I'm like, I know that just for me, like Cryo has stood out in terms of like the way that he performs. That doesn't even necessarily mean Cryo is a better Jett than Buzz, but it just I don't know. I've just never like, DRX have just never really like blown me away.
Sure. I will say as well, there is also like that very lazy angle, which some people essentially will just think they should be the best because they're Korean. It's like, it doesn't really work that way, does it? Like, it's not like Koreans just spawn the best in games. They have to like have loads of people play the game and all esports structure and all that jazz. Right. Another team then to talk about is, we've referred to them earlier, but like, it's got to be Paper X, right? Mm. Because here's the thing. I know people have said it at the last one and they were looking so good and they were in the low bracket and blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing. If they're going to do it, it has to be this time, surely. Surely this is the one where if they win the whole thing, which, by the way, would absolutely just fucking turn the world of Valorant on its head, obviously, right? As a region like this winning. But this could happen, right? It looks plausible.
Yeah, it does look plausible. And I'm struggling to decide who I think is going to win in this upper bracket final between Paper X and Optic. I said originally I thought Fnatic would get to the grand finals and win the whole thing, but I find it very hard to believe that whoever loses this upper bracket final will also lose the lower bracket final. I would not be surprised to see Paper X and Optic get to the grand final together. Paper X are insane. I mean, Forsaken, we spoke about him a bit before, is just like a beast. And so I think I spoke about this last week where he's so aggressive and he's so will just play immediately so far forward, like really pressurizing. And I think that to be effective in dealing with that as the opponent, you have to not necessarily play a fire with fire. You have to like essentially be the water. You have to find a different way of right. dealing with it, which may mean playing passive and having your, you know, the person who you're expecting to get the opening kills and stuff like that, they have to be really well positioned and really ready for it, which is why I'm actually particularly interested in this upper bracket final to see how Ye, who will be the person who is expected to deal with that most likely on Optic, to see how Ye is going to match Forsaken in that instance, because I think that Ye is fully capable of being able to do it, and the risk there, of course, is that if Ye is incapable of doing it, and we've already established that optics struggle if Ye gets caught out a lot of the time, then that could be like the Achilles heel for Optic. You know, like that literally could be it. It could come down to something as simple as that. But Forsaken is just insane. He has shut down so many teams.
Looks like him and Mindfreak have mad stats. Like, they just kill everyone.
So he had the second highest KPR of anyone in the tournament at nearly averaging one kill per round. He's 0.93.
That's
for his
absurd.
KPR. Yeah. I mean, I've written down like a bunch of his stats. I won't like reel all of them off, but he's the third highest opening kill. He has the third highest average damage per round. He's the fifth highest KD. He's the fourth highest ACS. So like, he is so many. And then Mindfreak, who you mentioned, is actually a player that I think was pretty underrated coming into this, or at least compared to the performance that he has shown here at Masters. I wouldn't necessarily say he is underrated compared to the performance he showed during VCT, from everything I've heard of people talking about their performance in the regular season. And Mindfreak's an interesting one because his statistics have been insane, but he is kind of up there as a controller player amongst a lot of like duelists and chamber players and stuff. He has the highest KD of anyone in the tournament at 1.48. He has the joint second cast percentage at 78%, and the person he's joint with is Marved. Right, which is the controller player for Optic, and someone that a number of people are talking about as being potentially one of the best players in the entire world. He's yes. also joint with Marved at for his KPR, where they are joint fifth for 0.86. And the interesting thing about that, again, is that for KD, KD's very like relative, because you could get one kill and no deaths in the whole thing, and your KD's going to look incredible, right? But with KPR, that's literally just a flat number,
yes.
the number of like kills you're getting per round. So for these controller players to be doing so well and being in that top five for the KPR is incredibly impressive. He also has the third highest headshot percentage. He's a controller player. He has the third highest headshot percentage at 37%. It's nuts. Like, Mindfreak has been like, coming into the competition, we're talking about Forsaken and Jing, because both of them are like this hyper aggressive, like duo. They're going to be playing these duelists. Like, they are the, you know, they're the guys who are like putting in the gunpowder. Mindfreak has been like this hidden secret weapon that has just been let loose and has had a real effect on the teams that PaperX have played against. PaperX have not lost a map so far. Granted, they've only played four maps, but they've played two EMEA teams, including they sent Fnatic down to the lower bracket. Fnatic, this team that I and many other people thought were gonna sure. have a great run and be making it straight through the grand finals. They are insane. They are insane. And some people were like, oh no, like PaperX, like once they come up against like these big EMEA and NA teams, like they, you know, they might find that they're not as good. And like, you know, Paperthin was saying how he felt like DRX have always shown that they can outdo PaperX. As it stands, those two teams didn't actually come face to face. So we never got to see
away.
That.
One game away.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see, but
sure. Just from the narrative that he set up like that, I at least want to know what's the answer.
Wait, I know. I want to know how the story goes. But I mean, it's a scary fucking team. And I think because they play in such a unique way, other teams have to look at them from a third person perspective. You know, if that makes sense, because I think that, like, for example, if you're playing a team from your region where the playstyle is fairly similar, you understand from their perspective why they're playing the way they're playing and what they're doing. And that's not to insinuate that these teams don't understand why PaperX are doing certain things, but they have to try and approach it from a purely theoretical standpoint and not from an empathetic standpoint. If that makes sense. Like, yeah, yeah. They don't play like that. They are not in the heads of a team that play in that sense. And I think that puts PaperX in a really, really interestingly unique position that they can use to their advantage over a lot of people, and so far have proven to be doing so.
Put it this way, I'll guarantee when teams are at the LAN that Paper X is one of the teams that's the most frequently like requested for scrim partners. Because as you're saying, if you haven't played them, you don't want to like just find out in the official match what it's like to play them. Like, that's a fucking nightmare. Yeah. You want to get a bit of practice. Yeah, you know.
I'd be terrified. Yeah. Sure. So, I mean, I think they'll make it to the grand finals. But who are they going to play against? Because obviously, so FPX and Fnatic are going to be they're in the lower bracket semis, so they're the other two teams who are still in. So I watched back some of the FPX games, haven't had a chance to actually watch anything that Fnatic have done because they weren't in the group stage. But from everything that I've seen and heard, Durka has been doing really well. Although I heard that Durka looked a bit better at the very start than like what continued on, but it's not that Durka has like fallen off or he's like done really badly or anything like that. I think like Durka going down a tiny bit is still like so far up from like a lot of people, so maybe that's an unfair way of putting it. But what I do know is that FPX looked really impressive, I think, especially so far in the playoffs, and now they have Sugetsu back on. I mean,
if people don't know, Ardis has the best ACS score.
Oh my god, Ardis as well. Like, Ardis has been an absolute beast. He also has Ardis has the number one KPR at 0.94. So, like, Ardis is just taking no prisoners. Yeah. It is absolutely ridiculous. He also has the highest average damage per round. So, like, Ardis is just, I don't know, he's up there doing whatever the fuck. But Sugetsu, like, in the game against DRX, there was this one round where he was in a 1v2 situation. It was a post plant, like the spike was about to go off, and the two players were like hiding in boathouse on the B site. And it was he had to encroach upon them. You know, they use a fade ult against him. And he just keeps walking forward and he fucks them up and he manages to get the round. And it's like, you've literally just shown up. You have absolutely no right to play like this. You've literally just shown up. You've had visa issues. You've like walked into playoffs and you're like doing this shit. It is insane. And so I think with him being back,
the only way it would be worse is if you were playing for their team, apparently, because you're like, what the fuck, you've only just shown up, why is he getting to do this, he's only just gone in the country, this is bullshit, we're supposed to win this.
Exactly. I'd be like, hold on, you get in fucking line. This is our time. No, he's just been nuts. So even though I think there have been those criticisms about Angel, which I mentioned earlier, and just him kind of being caught in some of the opening kills, opening deaths, I should say, a little bit more than you'd like. I think, yeah, he's joint third for the highest opening deaths, and has the second lowest cast percentage as well of anyone. So he's been having like, oh, and he's also got the third lowest KD of the whole tournament. So Angel's been having a little bit of a tough time in terms of his personal performance. But I think that doesn't look to me like it is enough to suggest it's going to be like the hole in the side of the ship.
Is he usually considered someone where even as the leader, he usually has like good individual performance?
I mean, yeah, Angel's always been a good player. I mean, because of the roles that he takes, he's never going to be the guy who you're looking at to be putting artist numbers, sure, right? But he's performing below what would be expected. And it's hard to judge because I really don't know how much of like the political situation is affecting Angel. Like,
not sure.
He's posted about it because they're not allowed to have flags on the stage, I think, for this event.
And
he made some tweet about like the situation with Ukraine and stuff like that. And I don't know what his. There could be a whole host of things going on for him personally regarding that.
I will say, people don't know, because he's an older player, I think he actually even has a family. I think he actually has like kids or something. I know he's married. So I think he even has a family. So I will say it's not necessarily the same as like if someone's like an 18-year-old CSGO player from one of those countries. Like you really can go away and just play the game at the LAN, right? But if you have a family, and especially obviously in this scenario, they live there most of the time, they're not traveling for Valorant that much. It could affect them more for sure. I'll give him a bit of a pass in that sense.
I think that, you know, and especially as Angel, there's such reverence around him because of his leadership and his abilities that he's proven as a leader, and the style that he takes in his leadership. Like, he's not the kind of player who I want to look at and be like, oh, you're putting up like some pretty bad stats here, you're shit. Like, he's just not. Like, I think that there's probably still a lot of value coming out of him in other ways, even if it's more just kind of like, you know, let's try and not get involved in like these opening engagements so much or whatever, and even just a tiny improvement there may just give FPX like the boost that they need when going against Fnatic, for example, less so than like really going hard on Angel. But I think, like, I would, oh man, because as I say, I predicted Fnatic, but at this point I would kind of like to see FPX go forward, just because I think their story for this event has been pretty cool. And I think that with artists and Sugetsu like being the way they have been, I want to see that go into a grand final, right?
Also, unfortunately, because of that whole bullshit with the last VCT, like, it just feels like they've got to have a chance. This is their time, surely. Exactly.
Yes.
Like, it looked like the same thing was going to happen, like you say. Like, they come into the group, say they can't bring Sugetsu, great. Like, now it's going to be like, we don't even get to the playoffs, he never gets to play. Like, it looked like it was just going to be a complete blue ball for two events in a row.
Yeah. No, I would honestly love to see them at least make it into the top three. But then, like, assuming they make it into the top three, they got to face either PaperX or Optic, which is also not like a really fun prospect for either.
For sure.
And I want to say I would still see PaperX and Optic going to the grand finals. Like right now, as everything stands, that's probably what I would predict, but I wouldn't put money on it. Like, it, you know, that's what I think will probably happen, but it could go so many different ways that I wouldn't be betting anything on it.
By the way, as a random aside, if people don't know, I'm almost certain, like, I don't even think this will be debatable, I'm pretty certain Angel must be, like, easily the most experienced active player in all of Valorant. Like, he was playing CS probably in the 2000s, if people don't know. Like,
he's probably this playing guy it is before half of the other players were born.
No, I guarantee he's probably some player. He was probably starting his pro career at the same time someone was born. If they were, like, 18, it could be, yeah, easily.
I don't know. Okay, so, yeah, I mean, he's an 80s baby. So, yeah, he years active as a player, 2005 is when he started. So what, that's 17 years ago. So there will definitely be players.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in this tournament, because do you have to be? No, you've got to be 16. Oh, I don't know how old everyone is. But there will definitely be players who were born the year that Angel started playing professionally. So
here's the thing, though, that the maddest one ever, no one will ever beat is the one we have in CSGO. Because in CSGO, right, what's mental is one of the best players of the last few years is the French player Ziwu, right, who plays for Vitality. And this is not an exaggeration. He was actually born on the day that the retail version of the original Counter-Strike was released. So as a result, it's like he is like Neo in the Matrix.
Destined.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. It's like he actually was just supposed to play Counter-Strike, apparently. Like, that is ridiculous, isn't it? I know. And he is also mega at the game, right? He is like some prodigy. So it's like, that's where you just wonder, like, is this a shit simulation or something? This can't be real life. This is just like bad. It's like a bad Marvel movie or something. Like, why is that the origin story? He's just born on the day the game came out. Like, what?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, that's very, yeah.
It's wild, isn't it? I know.
Marvel origin story. Yeah, I can see
that.
It's
too on the nose. It's too on the nose for me.
Yeah, but no, so you're right. Like, Angel is, and I guess that's also a thing that you can kind of like take into account, right? Is like, even if his personal performance is not necessarily to the par we would expect from him, he himself, that's not going to be a panic moment.
No, no.
You know, like if you're like some 18-year-old kid and you see that your stats aren't as well as you have in like ranked and in your online games, that could be like a real mental boom moment.
For sure,
like
yeah.
Really, really very much so. And I think that Angel's probably one of those players who just isn't going to be that way. And that's probably, you know, it's it's always an impressive thing to see a team make a lower bracket run. Like FPX went down into the lower bracket in the very first round because they lost to Fnatic. So yeah, I guess they're about to have their rematch. And lower bracket runs are hard because you've obviously got other good teams who are falling down into the lower bracket, and it's hard to predict who it is you're going to be playing against. But then also, you know, you're on your last life. And so I think that even though he's one of the players who's been receiving the most criticism for his own performance in this tournament so far, you know, he has clearly been a valuable enough member of the team and has been making up for it in other ways, enough for them to be getting to this point where they're now in the last four teams of the tournament.
One thing, obviously, as you said earlier on this episode, the difference in this episode event is we have the crowd component. And in theory, like after all those events in stupid Berlin and Iceland, we're back, we've got an actual like realist LAN tournament, right? What has your sense been on that regard? Because that's one area in Valorant that I don't really know how popular it is. Like, obviously, what makes it weird as an esports game is, the esports side seems to be doing fairly well, like at the VCT tournaments. There's times with the co-streaming element where it can get big viewership even for like the biggest events. Obviously, on some level, I think it's slightly impressive that it's been able to have some sort of penetration into Korea. It's not as big maybe as things like Overwatch, but it's in its own little, it's done better than CSGO in some of these countries, put it that way. So there's certain areas where it's doing well. But how do you think the game has done in terms of like crowd aspects? Like how many of the big LANs have actually had crowds? Like two or something? It's not many, right?
Did you see the Japanese one?
Oh, you mean for the LAN fans? I meant for VCT. How many of the VCTs have actually had crowds?
Oh, none of the VCTs.
None at all.
But like the Japan, like I think it may have actually been the Japanese VCT, the finals of that, just before this, was like a full arena.
Right.
And that's Japan, that's only Japan. And so I don't actually know what the capacity is for the venue or anything like that, but I think that it is going to be a very popular spectator esport. I mean, it's obviously a really popular esport anyway. Like it's on track to be one of the most popular in the world. I mean, it's going to take a while for it to get anywhere like CS or League of Legends. But like, I think that the fact that there are...
can have like 10,000 standing, so I'm assuming it won't be that. It says 8,500 seating capacity. Right. So that's actually, by the way, probably a decent venue. Because the good thing about that is even if you get half full, you can make it look decent. Like, so 5,000, not terrible. But if you get 10, you can still pack it out and also make it look... Because the problem is, if people don't know, especially early on in a game that hasn't had tons of fans, you don't want to gamble on like the 30,000 seater and then fucking get no one there. So that's actually worse if you do that, because you look silly, unfortunately. A decent size to go with. Like, I could believe, like, Denmark's a pretty good spot. You could get half of that full. You could get a decent amount in, I think.
Yeah, I think they'll have a good audience. And I think what I was going to say is, like, this might sound like a really weird, like, component to bring up. But I think that, like, the creative direction of Valorant esports is something that people really, really love. Like, just the artistic side of it. The visuals.
Do you want to know a prediction I have for you? That's where there will be a type of fan that will pick Valorant over CSGO. And here's what it is. It's on the angle of like cosplaying as the ancients and the fact that there's a lore to the game. Remember in Counter-Strike, there's no characters. You're just fucking the skin of the age. No one cares about that. Essentially, Counter-Strike is whoever the real life pro is. Whereas as you're saying, like, because it's more of a League of Legends component, that people can have fun with all the creative elements, can't they? Can cosplay, they can do all the fucking the weird things. Yeah, there's tons that you can do. If you went to a live event, you can dress up as these things. Like, you don't have that in CS, really. You can wear a jersey of Fnatic, that's about it, you know? Like, no one dresses as the characters in CS or anything. It's not a thing, is it?
But I think the creative director of Valorant Esports is a guy called Eric, and I think he's done a really good job. And with their whole, like, all of, like, the crazy LED stages and the AR stuff, and then, like, all of the cinematics they release are just insane. And I think for a lot of people, that's very novel. Like, that's something that we haven't seen in other esports, even though it's not actually the esport itself. But, like, people love being part of the universe of it. And so I think that is, like, a really big selling point and something people are very excited to be a part of and actually get to witness. And obviously, like, Valorant just being is really unique situation where it is jumped almost immediately to being a tier one esport, but its birth was in the pandemic. So for a lot of people, they have been following along and they've become really invested in this thing, and they have never been able to be a part of that in person. And this is their first opportunity to be able to do that and actually be a part of this thing that they've adopted as a big investment point in their life, like something that they really care about. And so I think that is going to make it a very special event because it's the first time everyone gets to be there together. It's one thing to like work these lands where it's just like a group of us and it's like what, 10 talent and we get to see it. And that's very cool. But like for, you know, all of these people who actually like, you know, they're just people. They actually get to be a part of it now and see these people in person. And I think that the investment that Riot have put into like building this, you know, like we were just saying, like, this universe and this creative sort of like vision for it and stuff. And so it feels like a very finished product. People can just step straight into that, by going. And I think that is a major selling point. I think people are going to really, really love that.
Being as you've obviously done, well, we've been through the list, but the big ones are obviously Overwatch, Rainbow Six, right? Here's the question for you. It is a bit of a loaded question, so we'll see how
okay.
you right? Does Valorant actually feel like your game now? Like if someone said, what is your game? Would you say Valorant?
God, whenever people come into my Twitch chat and they're like, Gio, which game do you like working the best?
Okay.
And I'm just like, well, I'm going to upset someone one way or the other.
No, I just mean more the sense of like, do you have the vibe? Like, this is where I am now.
It is a really interesting question because every major game I worked in, those three, at the time where that's been my main focus, like I've had that feeling of like, oh, this is home, right? I think that Valorant is the game that balances the things I like about all of the other games the best. So, for example, I love hero shooters. Like, for example, I'm not a big battle royale person, but I love hero shooters. I love that kind of thing. And that's what I loved about Overwatch. And I loved that Overwatch was, and this may like sound kind of funny, as a Counter-Strike fan, because I know there are a lot of people who are really into Counter-Strike who really don't like what I'm about to say, but I love that Overwatch is like colorful and exciting. Like it's something that like visually I really enjoy. And I don't really care about lore. I'm not really a lore person, but I enjoy that there are other sort of like tertiary media that comes along with that because it feels like I'm part of something big. And then with Rainbow Six, there was a lot of, there was still like this aspect of like the hero shooter because everyone's got abilities and stuff like that. I thought the events were absolutely incredible and I adored the people that I worked with. Rainbow Six as like a creative design though is a little bit more serious and dark for like what I would consider to match my like brand or aesthetic, if that makes sense. And so with Valorant, there's sort of like this really cool medium where it's a little bit more serious in the sense of like the actual gunplay compared to Overwatch, right? Overwatch was a little bit more like cartoony and actually the mechanics that were involved and stuff. A lot of the characters didn't even require you to shoot guns and stuff like that. But there is still that kind of like bright fantastical element to Valorant as well that maybe I didn't really get so much from Rainbow Six. So I really feel like Valorant kind of marries a lot of these different things that I loved about these other two major games that I've worked in. And I think that I love like absolutely adore League of Legends esports. And I love the way the events are. I love, again, this whole like tertiary media thing. Like when they started bringing in all this shit, like KDA and stuff like that, and even stuff that I don't really care about. Like, I watched Arcane and I loved it, but like stuff that I don't care about, I love that it exists. I love that it is like, it feels bigger than just this, but at the core of it, it's like you're watching like a really cool competition that you are there with a lot of other people and you can enjoy that with them. And I just love the way that League of Legends esports is built, and I feel like Riot are trying to do the same thing with Valorant, but in its own personality. They're not trying to be League. They're not trying to copy what League is, but they are building this, like, just, it's bigger than just like people playing a game. And so it's like, I can adore the competition, but I can adore that it feels like there's so much more to it. And that is something that I just love being a part of, really love being a part of. And I wish, I think if more esports were like that, I would find it harder to be so like committedly in love with Valorant. But yeah, I think that like Valorant has done a good job of just being something which really matches lots of different aspects of what I enjoy in different esports.
There you go. Quite a testimonial. Cut the commercial, hit the line, VCT champions, we can sort it all out. This video was supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Travis Goff, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Hades, Animosity, Joseph Ginsburg, Tobias Bernasconi, ButtPounder420, Jensen Gore, Kovacevich, Piercy, Tosh, Adam Ox, Toucan, and a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? You want to ask me a question at one of my monthly AMAs? Do you want teasers, find out who the upcoming guests are? Or maybe you want to take part in one of those lengthy esports discussions with moi? Well, if so, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.